Sasha Jones was sent off to ballet at the age of 6 on the recommendation of a doctor to help with her asthma and her weight. Ballet might have helped the asthma, but it did not help how she felt about her weight. By the time she was 16, she was a soloist with the Sydney City Ballet, but had been relying on laxatives and bulimia to keep herself slim. When her ballet career came to an end, an unhealthy obsession with diet and body size continued. The bulimia came back in her 40s. She'd had 3 children. She'd obtained a PhD in political theory, but yet suffered again from bulimia at that stage of life. She talks about this in her new book, The Fatter Sex, exploring the pressures that women face over their weight. It explores whether, in trying to get away from a thin ideal, the body positive movement has pushed too far in the other direction. Sasha Jones is with me in the Tamaki Makaurau Auckland studio. Kia ora, Sasha. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me, Catherine.
It's an interesting title, The Fatter Sex.
Yes.
What are you getting at with that title?
Well, it's the fact that female humans store as much as 50% more body fat than male humans do. We are programmed with a slower metabolism and we store fat more easily than males do. And also that I think we battle with fat as well, because we store this, particularly start to store this through puberty, which is a difficult enough time as it is. But whereas males tend to grow in height and they're eating more to grow up, grow their skeletons up and out, and we're eating more to store fat in order to menstruate and then, you know, presumably go on and potentially reproduce. So, but because of, you know, we're in a culture of, you know, where there's such an abundance of food, but also, so, you know, the temptation to overeat or, you know, without even thinking about it, it's so easy to gain more weight than is comfortable and healthy for girls, especially, particularly those who aren't going to be tall. Tall girls get it a little
easier. So the point is we're meant to carry more fat.
We are meant to carry
more
fat.
And that's not the message that we receive, is it, from many cultural sources?
Well, exactly. That's the other point, the thin beauty standard, as I put on my blurb, that basically we're expected to be, Mother Nature wants us to be heavier than our brothers, but Father Nature basically puts a lot more pressure on us to be thinner or leaner, although, yes, you know, there's various pressures. There's also, you know, there's some, as Beauvoir wrote in The Second Sex, and she's obviously, I've partly titled my book and being inspired by that feminist text, that women are expected to be flesh, but discreetly so, and then there's some pressure for women to be very fat in some parts of the world that she also wrote about, and she saw that as a sort of, you know, a way to keep women passive and,
So it's Beauvoir's The Second Sex. I was thinking about The Fairer Sex as being the possible play on words. There you go. Straight away, we have three different ways of generalising and describing what we're supposed to be.
It's complicated.
There's your personal story, as well as your reflections on cultural messaging and cultural movements in this book. There's your personal story. And could we get a little of that with the ballet? I mean, ballet, as does many performance, high-performance professional careers, has many issues to deal with. But actually it was the reason and it was the messaging already that started you or saw your mum send you to ballet that's very relevant here as well. Even at, I think, age 6, what was the messaging she was getting about?
I beg your pardon. My mum was fairly hands-off and not weight conscious or anything like that. I had asthma and the doctor recommended I be put into ballet. And I was drinking too much milk and I was chubby. But from that...
Did he mention weight, though, to your mum?
Well, no, he didn't. Okay. It was only my dance teacher when she took me along to, who turned out to be Tanya Pearson, a Russian, a very fierce teacher who ended up getting the Order of Australian Merit. This is in Australia, I grew up. And she said, told mum that I wasn't built for ballet, but the doctor recommended ballet or swimming and mum preferred ballet, so she chose it in that respect. But no, she was not the sort of mum to push me into ballet at all.
So when did the messaging from the teacher about weight begin registering with you?
Yes. Well, I mean, it was ballet books. It was even a school teacher saying, focusing on another girl who was trimmer and cuter, who was also doing ballet at a different school and asking her all about it and not wanting to ask me. I just became aware that I didn't look like a ballet dancer, as I put it, not just my weight. I was obsessed with ballet books as well, and so I took, and my teacher possibly was...
There's a moment, you say in the book, where she pinches your upper arm pinches
that is later.
You in the thigh.
Yeah. Later on, she was definitely very weight conscious, and she weighed all her full-time students once a week, but and then at one point, I would have been about 16 then, when she was driving me into ballet of a morning, and just reached across and pinched my upper arm, and she later explained it was very painful because I didn't have any excess fat, but that I was fine, but that she just read a study that's one way to test your body fat, and she pinched my, when I did put on weight, when I was taking laxatives, that was at 17.
When your first dieting measure at 10, was it, Sasha? Just explain
yes,
a little
yes,
more.
Sorry.
Because what you're explaining is really interesting. It doesn't have to be an overt. We imbibe the messaging around us from various sources, right?
Absolutely.
Without even necessarily consciously going, messaging's taken on board. And could you share a little more, I guess, of the earlier battles?
Well, again, it's interesting because it's not all about negative pressure. It looks in our body positive age that any pressure. I was over consuming this lemonade that Mum made. It was just sugar and water with some citric acid, no actual lemon, no health ingredient in it, in other words. And I just absolutely could not stop drinking it, to the point that when I did give it up to lose weight, Mum stopped making it, even though my brother and sister drank it, but they just drank so little by comparison, it wasn't worth it. So I've got this feisty appetite from a very young age, and that to me is, that I did need to rein that in. And my teacher congratulated me, and I wasn't too thin at 10, I just lost that, lemonade weight. But then I became obsessive, and that is the danger. There's a healthy, food diet management approach, and then admittedly I'm too young to make those decisions. I now see about, what I ate and drank and didn't, and cutting it out. So that's why I recommend this mother and daughter counselling from the age of 10 to get you through that pre-puberty where you're wanting to really consume as much sugar, really, and it's to store that fat, carbohydrates and sugar,
You were with the Sydney City Ballet at 16, so for whatever the messaging, you were a skilled performer and a successful performer. And what... knowing, and you talk also about the secrecy of bulimia, and we're going to come to the bunker incident in a moment. But you talk about the secrecy of this. But at that time, was there any kind of knowledge among others, or was this very hidden for you personally? Was there any kind of environment where there might have been an opportunity for help?
No, really, unless my teacher was going to step in. She did tell me I didn't need to lose any more weight at one of those weigh-ins. But, I was already eating just breakfast, surviving on a breakfast-only diet Monday to Friday, and then I'd eat on the weekend. And, Mum didn't know when I started taking laxatives. I wasn't at 16. I started at 17. But even that I didn't eat dinner, she didn't say anything about that. She's 42 years older than me. She's 100, actually, now, and still alive. But so she, was not raised with any kind of diet culture and didn't think either way that I needed to eat more or that,
And the ballet itself, though, the company itself.
Obviously ballet is a very slim art, and so there were plenty of versions of what I was doing. I had a lot of stamina. I wasn't starving myself in that sense, but it was not a healthy approach for the long term. It was too extreme for that, but and I did feel weak by the end of the week. But no, there wasn't anyone there at the, in the company. They were focused on the dance, yeah. And I was doing the dancing they wanted me to do, so I guess they weren't going to say anything.
Let's jump forward to the bunker incident, which actually comes quite early in your book, and you write of this experience that you had with a friend that really shocked you to the core.
Mm.
And interestingly, this was at a time in your own life where, as we said, you'd raising children and completed your studies and so forth, but you're struggling or dealing with bulimia again. But can we talk about the bunker incidents and what its significance is in the wider theme of this book and in your story?
Yes, I think that is why I started it. I think it is really telling and critical that I was in, I call it the bunker because it was my friend's, a Māori friend, who was suffering from diabetes and had shared that experience with me, and had actually lost some weight when I turned up. We had family bands that we shared, and we used to chat and have a lot of fun, and, you know, relax a bit with some AIDS. But, yeah, she'd lost some weight on this occasion. I noticed that sort of thing. Unfortunately, that's part of my training. But, you know, it was good on the one hand, and I had a policy of never congratulating female friends when they'd lost weight, because then you don't do the same when they put on weight. And, you know, you don't mention it. That tends to be how it works between female friends. So I was reluctant to congratulate her, but it just burst out of me, and she was happy about that. And then I thought, well, you know, that she was, you know, extremely overweight still. And so I just said, well, you know, you just have to, you know, lose it a bit more now and then you'll be great. And she took such offence to that, instant horrendous offence. I was stunned and just started insulting me in a terrible way, to the point that I felt I had to leave and tried to leave. And that's how I start the book. And then I start the appetizer, and then I go through the whole story of... you know, but I was sitting there as a thin, in my thinnest adult weight, being bulimic at night, and that was the secret. And I didn't realise that this was, you know, me saying this, she needs to lose a bit more weight, being white and thin, was, you know, it's so much more offensive than if I'd just been average weight and indeed been Māori or brown, I think, as well, because the white thin body is seen as the oppressive, particularly oppressive standard for brown women of colour.
How do you reflect on it now? Because what you were keeping secret at that time was that you were bulimic yourself. And how do you reflect on that interaction now? I think you guys kind of made up in time. As part of what we're talking about here,
I actually told her that on that occasion I wanted to leave. She didn't want me to leave. She said, I don't want you to leave. We get on. So she felt that she'd overreacted, I think, in that moment. And we sat down again and I just told her. I said, look, I've had trouble with food all my life. I'm actually bulimic. I probably eat more in a week than you eat, you know, more in a day than you eat in a week. And her face just completely relaxed. And it was like, okay, right, I get it now. Because she felt judged. She felt judged by me as white, as thin, as, overconfident, and, you know, and just someone that she couldn't relate to at all. She said, we're so different. And we weren't, from my perspective, so different, because I had this secret, or I don't know if that was a connection, but, you know. So, I think for the body battle, I think we need to get to women to help these, you know, to be as clear as we can about our different battles and less secretive. Obviously, it's a dirty, bloody secret, bulimia, and it's so shameful. I hadn't told my husband at that point. He knew about the younger bulimia, but not this one. So I really didn't want to tell anyone. I was quite scared, almost couldn't believe I was telling anyone. That's how shameful you feel. And I'm so, you know, getting over that, I think, finally, and this is my battle plan, and it's detailed how you do that to be, you know, to feel good about yourself and to be able to handle all the food temptations, both the physical and the mental issues that affect all of us. So, but this idea that, you know, if you shame one woman, you can, you know, keep her down for a while. But if you teach women to shame each other, then, you know, you never have to worry about controlling them again. And I think that's what, you know, the wider culture is doing one way or another, because we're sort of celebrating extreme obesity as well. We're not just, you know, we're not just fighting the thin beauty standard. and continuing to have a thin beauty standard, which is problematic, obviously, and pushing dieting, although we're pushing anti-dieting and we're pushing health at every size, which is actually, you know, not true. And I don't think it's helping women, and I don't think it's helping girls. And there's a lot of, you know, conflict between mothers and daughters over this, because the daughters are grown up in the body positivity age, and mothers, you know, obviously more likely to be grown up when dieting was less, you know, sort of demonized. But yes, there's some, so we're meeting in the middle. And for women of color and white women as well, because there's misunderstandings. And I go into detail. I don't know how much of it you've read, Catherine, but,
yeah,
you know.
Look, I have, Sasha. Let's come to that. The Fatter Sex is the book, A Battle Plan for Women's Weight, Health and Humour.
Mm.
When it comes to your own battle plan for yourself and for where you want to be in that balance between what your body wants and craves, and that is very personalised, and we're learning more from science and epigenetics about how that can be set quite early in life.
Right.
And where you want to be in terms of nutrition of your body, and the health of your body.
Yeah.
Where have you landed in your own personal battle plan, as you put it?
Yes, well, I'll just preface that by saying I got into the battle plan when it was a sort of a reality check moment with my daughter, when I was advising her to get a BMI checked, because she, her weight had flung, you know, flipped from being underweight to just, you know, really eating and just not worrying about anything. And I thought it would be a good idea if she got her BMI checked. And when she wouldn't listen to me. That didn't help. It was the wrong thing to say. But I realised in that moment, incredibly, that I had never had my BMI checked, and I was terrified of the prospect. So that I never want to be a hypocrite. I, you know, value my integrity, I've thought, you know, apart from bulimia in other respects, and as a mother too. So I realised I'd completely, you know, betrayed myself and my daughter there. And so I went and got my BMI checked, and I was terrified. I was terrified. That's pathetic at 50 or 49. And, you know, I was in the healthy weight, and this is when I was also bulimic. I was just a night bulimia. I thought it, you know, wasn't real bulimia like it was before, but it nonetheless was bulimia. And so I was kidding myself about that as well. But, yeah, so I got the weight check. I was in the upper end of healthy BMI, and that was like, oh, my God, I thought I was skinny. But then it dawned on me that this is actually a good thing. This is healthy. This is what I need. Because it's a two... And so that really helped me start this. I started gradually, you know, having to stop bulimia without any... I stopped bulimia in my 20s because it was making me infertile, right? And I read that sugar, you know, basically can, you know, destroy sperm. And sure enough, I broke free of it then, stopped eating sugar, stopped binging, and we conceived. So this time in my 40s, I didn't have anything like that to stop my bulimia. And when you can get rid of, you know, like thousands of calories really easily, it's really hard to not do that and just eat as much dinner as you want, right? So there, the BMI test, and there's a lot against BMI out there these days, but you know that it's prejudice, it's shaming and all the rest. But
well, there's some scientific input that is absolutely not a one-size-fits-all.
Sure.
That one needs to be careful of hanging off individual numbers.
Well, the thing about BMI...
It's all black, for example, in me, with respect to BMI. Yeah. But anyway, yeah. Carry on.
Well,
carry on.
Dame Valerie Adams, in fact, speaking of muscle mass, like, she, if I can say this, but because six trim activists, and she's one of the trim activists I sort of do a brief case study of, but her BMI is technically obese, but she's, because she's got so much muscle. So if you've got a natural or normal or whatever the word is amount of muscle, BMI will fit your you know, it is healthy. It is a healthy 2-stone range for someone my height, 5'3.5". I've got a 2-stone healthy weight range. It's quite a wide range. It's not a specific number. So I'd push back a bit against that anti-BMI. It's also not, you know, it's medically proven on health outcomes, really. It might have been started.
Okay.
And,
so it was important to you, important to you actually coming out of the bulimia, right?
Yes.
And then where have you got to and how with your own battle plan towards healthy...
Yes.
Eating, healthy self-concept, being happy with body.
Yes.
And how?
Yeah. Well, the other thing that I exercise, I wasn't really doing much exercise, and even as a former dancer. So I think I can relate to, and I was making excuses for not exercising, but then when I saw my BMI, it was healthy like that, and I had that sort of breakthrough with my daughter, the shameful breakthrough, but I can't keep being bulimic. I can't advise my daughter. I have to get well and you know. So I went back to doing just on my own, you know, at home, exercising, and I built it up, and now, you know, it's dancing with weights. I was swimming once a week. I've continued that, but particularly adding the sort of more rigorous heart pumping exercise. That's so good for your mental health. It's, you've got to really push yourself. Like, I'm running upstairs, and I wasn't doing that for my whole. I couldn't do that in my 30s. I couldn't have done that in my early 40s, almost in my 40s. But now in my 50s, I can run upstairs. And that's just from practice and building up the actual muscle. Muscle, I'm sorry, but, you know, again, to talk about weight, but muscle burns fat. So you've got your long-distance runners, and they're the, you know, very, very lean athletes. And the athletes that have a lower body fat can actually eat more. And this is tested, the studies, it's in the book. So Mother Nature will actually reward you if you are a healthy weight and you've got a good muscle mass, which we all would have had again in nature because of all the exercise we were doing.
Do you believe you're there, Sasha? Mm. do you believe you're there personally with this battle? Goodness knows, I don't think we're there as a culture.
We're definitely not there as a culture, no. And we need. I think we need mother and daughter counselling because I'm not there with my daughter. Definitely not. It's not good at all. She's, you know, there are other issues too, but this is the central one.
And was that different than with your sons? Do you think?
No conflict over that. But yeah, we're not in a healthy relationship either. We were very divided politically. In the end, my sons and but that's another book, and yeah. It will be another book.
What difference has writing the book made to the whole journey for you?
I have added quite a few things. I've tried to put as many... that's a tricky question, isn't it? I was doing stand-up comedy and then, you know, trying to get out of politics because I was so political. I was looking at violence against women for my PhD thesis and I was a member of the Labour Party, active, and, you know, it was just sort of draining me. I needed something, and it also wasn't getting through to anyone. Like, your thesis just sits on a shelf, really. Few people download it, maybe, but... This, I was wanting to get to women. I wanted to make it more accessible, but these messages that might still help women as a sex class and, you know, who are in conflict over the body battle, which I think is the essential, one of the essential battles that keeps women in conflict with each other and also keeps us, you know, not focusing on, you know, fighting for our
other
own
things.
Yeah.
So the book has been... a mechanism, really, for in a way that the other endeavours weren't. Do you think?
It was. It's more comprehensive, like connecting the personal and the political, which is the feminist second wave feminist mantra. But yeah, how you do that, you know, is easier said than done, right? How you sort of live as a feminist, and as I said, with being bulimic and telling my overweight Maori friend that, you know, she just needed to lose a bit more weight. Well, that's not feminist. That's not feminism. And hiding bulimia, even though it is so shameful, but you know, there's a lot of, you know, oh, well, white women are bulimic or whatever, and that's not fair, you know, but... So there's a lot of stereotyping, including mother blaming. I'm trying to, you know, that the books, maybe I've read much more about that, and it feels like I have been, you know, a victim of that, and it just doesn't help that our daughters will become mothers and they'll have to experience the same thing.
Sasha, thank you. Sasha Jones, the book is The Fatter Sex.